The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond.
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 What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 405. I'm your host for the day, Marty Sliva. Max Scoville and Andrew Goldfarb are dead on the streets of Cologne, Germany.
That's right. They're there for Gamescom.
Oh, they're not dead.
No, they're alive. Sony's presence is dead.
Sony's presence
on the streets
is dead
of Gamescom.
That is fine, because instead we have two incredible guests in Brian Altano. Joining me to my left is making her Beyond Return, Megan Sullivan.
What's up, everybody?
Megan, this is a good episode for you to be on. We're going to be talking about a lot of Final Fantasy. Brian Altano. And of course, Jared Petty.
I still lack a catchphrase.
You don't need it. You don't need it.
If you say that one enough, that will be it.
That will become my catchphrase.
Yeah, that's how it works.
I was thinking, like, you know, yo boogie.
Yo boogie.
Yo boogie.
Yo boogie.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. If you notice the bounce rate from this episode, everyone stop listening.
Right
yo
there.
Boogie.
Yo,
yo
boogie.
Boogie. Really, yo boogie. Yo boogie really offended them.
That's my favorite canceled Rare game.
Yo boogie.
Damn it, Jared.
We got to get through the intro.
We got to get through the intro.
Then it's open waters.
And then you can talk about Jetpack and Snake Rattle and Roll.
No, I'm not going to do it.
We have a lot of things to talk about this episode pre-Gamescom. It is Final Fantasy XII possibly getting a remake, remaster, or maybe it's just lies. All right, we're going to cut your mic because that's not the noise you make to Final Fantasy XII. It's a real good game. We're going to talk about Final Fantasy VII, some changes that might be in the remake.
Why don't we just talk about all the Final Fantasies?
We're going to talk about Final Fantasy 1.
That's a great game.
That was a real good game. We're also going to talk about the fact that the Konami drama just keeps getting so much better.
So much better. By better, you mean terrible and sad.
Oh, yeah. It's a debacle. And then we're also going to touch on how rad the PlayStation Plus lineup is for August and some of the cool games coming out this month.
Hooray!
We did it. Starting off, Final Fantasy 12. Earlier this week, it was reported that at a Distant Worlds concert, the conductor, Arnie Roth, sort of said that they are working on, I believe the exact phrasing was, a remake of the PS2 classic.
When did he just yell this during the concert?
Yeah. That's what conductors
like
do, right?
This amazing crescendo of sound, and he's just like, and we're remaking Final Fantasy.
And I love that, like, Square PR people are just like freaking out, like, that's not what was supposed to happen.
Did they rush the stage and just drag him off?
So just like, you just notice a bullet going, it's like, oh god, what happened? But then, you know, everyone's freaking out, like, this is weird because this is sort of the black sheep of recent Final Fantasy games. It's divisive.
It's very divisive. People love it or they hate it. There is no in between.
And by divisive, you mean beloved by the right-minded.
That's why Jared's on.
Right.
So many wrong. I don't even know where to start.
So we're gonna get into the game in a second, but Square updated the story. The conductor issued a statement on the Facebook page that said, in response to comments posted by fans, I want to rectify a statement made on stage Saturday night during the Distant Worlds concert. Music from Final Fantasy, where is it? Following conversations with composer Sakamoto regarding new concert arrangements of the music of Final Fantasy XII, regrettably, the term remake was used in error during one of the announcements that took place on stage at the concert. We sincerely regret any confusion.
So it did take place on stage.
It was on stage.
That is a bizarre place to announce.
So they just apologized for saying remake. They didn't apologize for saying for anything about remaster.
Remastered. Which back in 2013, Yoshinori Kitase hinted at. He said that if Final Fantasy X HD remastered sold enough copies, they would love to make Final Fantasy XII remastered. Yeah. And then we didn't hear anything again until
Until this impossible leak happened.
And that's a fascinating turn of phrase there, because I think this is a game that really would benefit from a remake more than a remaster.
Mm-hmm.
A remaster would be fine to pretty it up, but Final Fantasy XII is a game full of good ideas, some of which are poorly executed on. I feel like another gloss of polish, sort of like some of the same folks that worked on this worked on the original Tactics Ogre and mm-hmm. then went on to make the remastered Tactics Ogre Let Us Cling Together.
Yep. Final Fantasy,
right? Another pass turned Tactics Ogre from a pretty neat game with some neat ideas and some problems into a masterpiece. I feel like there's a kernel of a tremendous RPG in Final Fantasy XII.
Well, you know the backstory, right?
Yeah.
The whole backstory with Matsuno had a nervous meltdown and basically got into a fight with management because they wanted to add characters who weren't supposed to be in the game, like Vaughn and Pinello. And it was this whole drama where the game had been going on. The development was like years. It cost millions, like $35 million. And Matsuno had gotten into a fight with upper management because they said, hey, you don't have enough pretty anime boys in this game.
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing
Final Fantasy needs, pretty anime boys.
It's more spiky hair and zippers and pretty boys running around. And so Matsuno, who's known to do Tactics Ogre and Final Fantasy Tactics, and he's very thematically and mechanically sophisticated games, was like, not really. I kind of want to make a more mature main character. It was either supposed to be Balthier or Bosch. There's some disagreement. It was supposed to be the actual hero. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, you've got to throw in Vaughn and his pretty girlfriend, Pinello.
Yep.
And so when you start off in the game, you're like, I don't understand this main character and why they're so lame.
Neither do they.
Yep. Neither do they. They were shoehorned in, and about a third to halfway through development, Matsuno was like, I'm out.
He just walked away.
I can't do this. Basically walked away. Ostensibly, it was for... I can't say words.
Yeah.
It was basically, oh, I'm sick. I'm stressed out. Yeah. But really, it was probably...
It was like, I can't deal with this anymore.
Creative
differences. And so there is a kernel of brilliance in the story and the mechanics, but it falls apart because basically the person who wrote and directed and designed all the tactics...
The story falls apart. I feel like the mechanics are pretty sound.
The mechanics are good throughout. If you like that sort of thing, if you like the gamut system and you don't mind walking away from a game... Like literally putting down the controller and be like, "Well, my characters know what to do. I'm off," which people reportedly did.
I actually do love that. I love the fact that it reminds me a little bit of the few things I like about MMOs in like World of Warcraft, but just streamlined into a single player experience.
Yep.
I like setting up. You know, it's almost like a strategy game where I put in the work beforehand, and then when I watch a battle unfold, I'm like seeing the efforts.
That's what I liked about it too, actually, and that it reminded me in some ways almost of old turn-based RPGs, which is the same way. You're doing all your work ahead of time, and then once you get to a turn-based system, not even an active time battle thing, but it's just kind of like, well, it's going to play out, and it's, as long as you make a couple of smart decisions, it's going to play out well based on the work you've already put into it. That's what I liked about it. I really enjoyed that. I also liked the, hey, I see a guy over there, and I don't have to go fool with him, that Chrono Trigger Earthbound thing where it's like, well, there's a dude over there. I don't want to fool with him right now. I'm going to go this way.
Sure. Yeah, this would be, again, I mean, if this thing is real, I would love to replay this game on Vita. I think this would be a perfect candidate for a game that, I mean, you are right. A lot of the game, you sort of turn your brain off a little bit. And I wouldn't mind having this be a thing that I have on a handheld while I'm also watching a TV show.
I could get behind the argument it would make a good Vita game because you could just set your gambits and then you could be like, all right, cool, I'll go do something else and then I'll come back. And this boss is beaten. But because it wasn't really an MMO, it tried to be both things. It tried to be an offline MMO, and that didn't work. Either commit and be an MMO and be a strategy game in line with Final Fantasy Tactics, or go with the more traditional main series, but it wanted to do everything, and it's like it couldn't figure out what it wanted to do, for me, at least.
Yeah, and it also didn't help that the story is a complete grease fire. Because of what happened.
It's fire grease.
It is. And yet somehow still makes more sense than Final Fantasy VII's narrative.
Plus, some of the mechanics, like, you want to get this, like, really powerful spear, but if you open the wrong chest in the wrong area, you don't get it. Like, there were conditions that made no sense.
Basically,
it was designed to, you have to buy a game guide in order to get through this game.
That's stupid.
Dude, Square did a lot of that.
That's what keeps me employed. Hey, it's my bread and butter.
You don't have to buy our guides. You just click and watch a dumb ad that pops up every once in a while, unless you're an IGN Prime member.
Don't have to watch the ad.
There was a real... dark days for strategy guides back then. I remember the, I think it was the Final Fantasy IX strategy guide that was pretty much broken in half, and you'd get to the end of something in the actual strategy guide that you bought. It's like, go on the website and read the rest of it. And I'm like, this was like, I think it was like dial-up internet and everything, and I didn't have a computer in my room, and I'm like, what is happening? I bought this for $15. Like, tell me how to kill this monkey man. I don't know if there was a monkey man in the game.
I'm sure there was.
If
somewhere.
There was, he deserved to die.
Monkey man's attack.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the main villain's name. Wasn't he kind of a monkey man? Or maybe I'm thinking of a...
What was that? Someone with an R? Someone with a K?
No,
I don't know. Monkey man's...
Ricky the gorilla.
Ricky the chimp!
Ricky the chimp, of course. Yeah. As opposed to fishmans.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about fishmans.
Yeah, fishmans? Yeah. Are they fishmen or fishmans?
It's why can't it be both?
Well, I was playing Etrian Odyssey 2 the other day, and it's suddenly like, it says fishman's attack. And I was like, that's amusing. I don't know. That's
not amusing. Kujo was actually a pretty kick-butt villain. He was
Monkey man?
I don't think he was Monkey Man. Wasn't the main character? The main character was a
Monkey
tail?
Man. He had a real tail. Oh, okay. Rinal Town is very confused right now.
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of lost in the jungle on this one.
Have you played any of the Final Fantasy games, Brian?
Yes, but I haven't played 12. 12 is way beyond when I gave up on those. I have a confession to make. I got way into Crystal Chronicles.
You really?
Is that weird?
Do you like buckets?
That's awesome.
No, I had a bunch of friends who just had like we had all just happened to be living near each other at the same time, and we would get together with like a big handle of rum and just stay up making rum and cokes and playing Crystal Chronicles till like 2 or 3 o'clock.
That sounds like a great evening.
Is that the one? Did it use the GBA?
It used GBAs. Yeah. It was a GameCube game.
Yeah.
And it was not a good game, but it was just a fun multiplayer game.
You had to have like those octopus arm wires coming out of that. Mm-hmm. That was that, and that really cool Pac-Man game used
that
too.
Was great.
Four Swords used that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually hoping we'd see more stuff like that when they announced the connectivity with the Vita, but apparently a lot of people don't want to sit around a television holding little handheld devices.
Also, they would have had to.
One of them has to carry a bucket the entire time.
And they'd have had to have sold more than 7 Vita, too.
That's true.
That would have helped.
True. I've had half of the Vita audiences right in this room right now.
Yeah.
Moving on to another Final Fantasy game and more Final Fantasy news. The Final Fantasy VII remake, we keep getting these little details about what's actually going to change and sort of what's going to stay the same. But one of the big things that came out over the weekend was that there are going to be drastic changes to the combat system. And didn't go into more detail than that, but I sort of just wanted to open that up to what do you think that means? Do you think that means keeping traditional ATB, or is this going into more action?
I think, Marty, that means that we are living in a materia world, and I am a materia girl. That's what I think it means. That's my answer there. So
I'm not going back to the mic until you rectify this.
I don't think I can. That's okay.
If there are two polar opposite points in the universe, it is you and Madonna.
That's true. Yeah. I think that that the traditional ATB system is probably going to be replaced, if nothing else, because of they're shaping this game and its previous system kind of like beautiful CG remaster. Mm-hmm. It's going to be this lovely thing, and I think maybe the fact that Final Fantasy VII used like three different perspectives in the game. You had like the funny little cartoon fat people, and then you had the better done CG, and then you had the little sprite people, and they were always jumping back and forth between them. I think they're going to go for a much more unified look this time.
Yeah.
And that may not be conducive to the kind of like zoom in random encounter ATB system that you saw before.
Yeah.
So I think it's possible you might have map-based combat again, where you're just seeing people and the combat takes place right there in the same scene that you're walking around in, as opposed to get any kind of zoom in, zoom out situation. I think that you might see something more like what Tri-Ace did with Final Fantasy XIII-3 in Lightning Returns, where you've got this kind of rhythmic switch around battle system going on, something that's a little that game was effectively Mike Tyson's Punch Out with RPG stats and a dumb story. A real dumb story. Maybe something more like that, where you're constantly filtering in and out. I'm suspecting something a little more along this line that we're getting in some JRPGs on consoles, of things being a bit more action-y.
Yeah, and I kind of had a hunch that would happen, because to me it felt like when they debuted the notion that this game would be a thing at E3, I think everyone in the room was like, this is for me. And I was sitting there going like, no, it's not. Mm. This is for people who play video games in 2015. And that doesn't mean it's not for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you grew up on Final Fantasy VII, this might not be what you want, because I think this might skew more towards somebody who plays video games now and somebody who plays RPGs now, because a lot of the stuff in Final Fantasy VII is pretty old school.
No, and I'm completely okay with that. I mean, the materia system, it depending if you like games where your characters are blank templates,
yeah,
you're really going to like VII's materia system. But if you want your characters to feel distinctive, they're going to have to change something,
yeah,
because otherwise they're pretty much just slots for sticking the abilities you want them to have, and the characters outside of their annoying personalities don't actually have a lot that distinguishes them.
Well, how do you feel about having the option to switch between the two, or is that basically designing two completely separate games?
I think that it's a lot of work. I would love the option. I think it would be great to have the option.
That would be wild if it gave you the option of traditional turn-based battles or of more active action.
I mean,
battles.
I feel like I've played remakes. Nothing's jumping in my mind right now, but I've played remakes of games or remasters of games that had old play styles and new play styles that kind of gave you the option.
Chrono Trigger did, but it was subtle on the DS.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
It was a subtle change, though.
I just played that recently on the DS.
Yeah, and that did allow you to do that, but this would be a lot more work, yeah. I'm guessing, if they're going for a full, like action-based combat system. It's going to be a lot different. And again, we're speculating here. But ATB is – I like it. It's a fine way to play a game, but it's not the be-all, end-all of RPG controls.
Yeah, and when you I mean, like you mentioned some of the games, but when you look the Final Fantasy series over the past 6-7 years, what like the looking at Crisis Core and Type Zero and
yep.
you know Lightning Returns, and then what we've seen of 15 and Dusky, it's definitely moving to a sort of real-time action-oriented approach, which again I don't think is a bad thing, because I think everyone who played the 15 demo really liked it.
Yeah, but I'm really curious cool. to know in 7 how they're going to implement certain things, like you know overdrives and whatnot, like how
yeah.
those are going mm-hmm. to. I don't know if it's going to be more like the paradigm system of Final
yeah.
Fantasy 13, or I don't know if they are willing to risk going full on action,
yeah,
sort of like Final Fantasy 15, and then lose sort of what made Final Fantasy VII's core mechanics, like losing some of that element. I'm a little nervous about that, but I think what Brian said is very true, which is this is made for a younger generation who may not have the patience to do the whole turn-based.
Totally.
As long as I don't have to watch Knights in the Round animate, I'm fine. Other than that, I'm good.
Don't you have 30 minutes of your life to waste?
No, I don't.
What if you could pay for DLC to have it go by quicker?
Then I would like to burn my PlayStation.
Yeah.
I would like to see the animation at least once, though, because the summon animation in 15 was amazing.
Oh,
was so good. Like, that brought a tear to my eye, because it was like, Ramu was one of my favorite Final Fantasy IV summons, and to see
yeah.
that again was
yeah.
amazing.
But that's also a worrisome thing, so I'm like, it's awesome to see it that one time when you're fighting the, what's the little monster's name?
Oh, which one?
The
behemoth?
Yeah,
the behemoth.
Behemoth.
Yeah.
It was awesome to see that first time, but I'm like, man, if I had to watch this whole thing every time I do this.
But they always had an option to shorten the animation, too.
Not
like
in 7, though, right?
In 7, no. In 7,
seven
no.
was notorious.
I think, or wait, or is it 9? I'm getting mixed up. In 7, I think you had to watch it.
Yeah,
I could be forgetting.
I think you're right, Georgia. I think later ones, they realized that people did not want to sit through 10-minute summons.
Yeah.
Over and over and over and
so
over.
They were pretty, and you had the load times, of course, with PlayStation. Even if you skipped things, you still had to wait for the animation to load before you skipped it.
If you're like me, you had a drive that kept skipping.
Oh, that's
all
fun.
All the cutscenes, which was not fun.
I'll tell you what, you were talking about the 15 animations and how beautiful they were. I want a new ActRaiser with that kind of scale. Like
so
that would
Mitch.
Be amazing.
You have no idea how much that would please me.
Yeah,
I love ActRaiser.
Yeah, well, that's because ActRaiser is sublime.
Yeah.
It's like, we're just going to take SimCity and Rastan and make a video game out of them. And for some reason, you put those things together, and it's great.
Yeah. No, it's a great idea.
You should have recommended ActRaiser to Rygar guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rygar guy really would have liked
He would have loved that. Do people here know Rygar guy?
Nope.
Have you told Rygar guy?
That was a comedy button thing, wasn't it?
So.
Rygar
yeah.
guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I told the story about this guy I met at a wedding who recognized me and wouldn't stop. What's a nice way to say it? Pestering. he just basically came up to me the entire night, asked me questions about old video games, if I remembered them or not. But he had this very thick southern New Jersey accent, which was like, hey, Brian, before you go, let me ask you one more question. Have you ever heard of Rygar for the Nintendo Entertainment System? And I was like, yeah, but I'm trying to get a drink right now. Can we talk about this another time?
Titular hero.
There's
Rygar.
Some stuff with that. That's all good news.
Yeah,
Brian, let's move on to something horrific.
Yeah, this is a story. I'll let you lead this up because this is.
God. All right. So recently, we've seen a lot of bad news in the press about Konami because it's been sort of disastrous over there. Watching their once kind of strong arm game division lean towards pachinko machines and mobile games, and their AAA games kind of withering away.
We saw Silent Hills get canceled. We saw PT get pulled off the PlayStation Store. It's a huge problem. We saw that entire relationship dissolve.
Kojima's name getting pulled off of the
front of the game. And then we started reading stuff about how Kojima was impossible to work with. He was expensive. He was a diva. And it got me thinking, like, who's awful here? Is it Konami? Is it Kojima? Konami has now had the ball spiked right back into their court. And they've done stuff that's more awful than pretty much I think any game developer that I've heard of outside of maybe horror stories you heard from Zynga or was the company that was working on Rise, that Xbox One exclusive,
where they were
bragging about how many many dinners they had to expense,
how many children's births everyone missed.
Yeah,
that's really, I'm playing Rise right now, and it's just weird.
And all you're thinking
about. You're playing Rise right now?
Because I finally got my Xbox One to work.
Cool. That's very. I was like, man, that's an odd one to revisit.
I wasn't revisiting it.
Jessica grabbed Sunset Overdrive. Yeah.
So there was an article in a Japanese financial newspaper that basically explained, and I guess they talked to people off the record who were working there. They were, A, talking about how much of a nightmare it is to work on Metal Gear Solid 5, and B, how much of a nightmare it is to work at this company. Now, in business ethics in Japan, there is sort of like this known quantity that it's you stick around for the bad stuff, and there's a nobility to doing that, and you don't really get fired. You just get kicked down the rung of the ladder of the company, which means that CEOs can get put in a room with nothing to do but a blank stack of papers.
They call it a window-facing job.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Until they go crazy or commit suicide or get horribly depressed. And in this case, we had some stuff that's kind of like that, because we had people who were kicked down the rung in Konami for not performing properly or not doing whatever was ascertained to be their jobs, and were given jobs as people who are now suddenly cleaning up the sports club, which is, I guess, their version of a gym that was probably never used, and also just straight up being janitors, cleaning up some turds on the ground that people were leaving in
there.
It's
insane. It says... any members of the staff, quote, deemed useless, end quote, are apparently resigned to other jobs, including assembly line work at Konami's patchy slot machine factory, working as security guards, and even cleaning up at the company's fitness club.
Yeah, we've got this quote, too, which is horrifying. Like, if you're listening to this and you're at work and you're like, man, my boss is a dick, or he's always checking my time cards, or I have to work overtime and blah, 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 and I don't get paid. Totally agree. Props to you for struggling through that. This will make you feel better. The culture at Konami is also explored, with cameras apparently placed in the corridors to monitor employee movements, while time cards are used to monitor how long everyone is taking for lunch, with those deemed to be taking too long being named and shamed throughout the company.
That's what's really good. Most Konami employees aren't given their own email addresses. While sales and PR staff who have to communicate with outsiders do have permanent addresses, many others have one that is routinely randomized every few months.
So this baffled me, because how does that even... How does that help anything?
Yeah.
I don't understand what that is aiming to accomplish.
It's cutting off all external communication.
I've heard this
from people who have worked, you know, in these places. Like, these are not fabrications. This is not like, you know, these aren't like senseless stories. Like, this is kind of how it was.
You guys talked about the Japanese business ethic culture. Yeah. I mean, traditionally, and again, a lot of things have changed a lot in Japan in the last 20, 30 years. But the idea was, yes, you're supposed to show your employer loyalty through the good times, the bad times. But likewise, that's supposed to be a symbiotic relationship. Your employer is supposed to show you loyalty as well. And that when you suffer for the company, whether you be the one to take the fall or the one to give all the hours and the time or the one that lowers maybe your expectations so that you can stay at pace with the team, likewise, there's an expectation that you're supposed to be lifted up in those moments, that you're supposed to be protected, taken care of, that your job is going to be there, that what you did is going to remain relevant. And I worry very much that this is a sign of something. I mean, this sounds a lot like the rumors we heard coming out of Sega a few months ago. And that's kind of a horrific thought. If corporate culture is degenerated to this point within an old Japanese company, that's a frightening sign.
So a lot of it's sort of hard to understand this from our perspective, not just as Americans, but as people who just consume video games, right? Like, we want to go to a store, buy a game, and then expect it to be good. That's the very little that we ask, and we'll give you $60 in return, and we'll have a good time. What a lot of people don't realize is that every major company basically bets. And in Konami's case, they made two major bets. One of them was Silent Hills, which dissolved because it was basically like Guillermo del Toro was trying to hang out with Kojima, and Kojima was like, I can't, my stepmom's being insane to get to that. I have to go clean the turret.
I want to see. I want to hear that codec call. Yeah. Just
right,
that.
Right, totally. Back and forth. And two is Metal Gear Solid V, which I, for a number of reasons, as we talked about before, is I think partly Kojima, and I think partly, obviously, Konami, is way over budget, is still not out. It's I would say that's 100% why we saw them sell up a chunk of it last year for full price. And I think when a company like this, of this size, takes bets like this, and one of them dissolves completely and one of them gets pushed down the line and gets more and more inflated, that puts everything at huge risk because they basically, like movie studios do this in America. Well, they'll say, hey, we're putting everything on, you know, Pixels and Hot Tub Time Machine 4 or whatever. Yeah. And then both those movies tank and they're like, we have to do a ton of layoffs. And then they don't have anything lined up in the next 6 months. And the studio closes. Yeah. And all of a sudden, like that logo you saw before, something you liked for a very long time, is gone.
Yeah. Right.
And it's just gone forever.
Cell phone games and pachinko are surefire money makers in Japan at this point, or at least they're perceived as such by the people who invest money to enable businesses to start new projects. So right now there are two big console hits. One's massively over budget. The other one's vanished, and they're looking at the people who would be willing to reinvest in their company. And they're pointing at the two things, and they're like, "Yeah, that's easy money. Of course we're going to make money on that. How could we lose?" That's really bad news for us. I think Konami could recover. I'm worried that they're going to go the way of SNK or or Sega after Sammy bought them
So what is that like? Where does that leave the properties though? Like, where do you think? So I guess what are like? Obviously, we're talking about Metal Gear and Silent Hill, but I mean the other notable Konami things are Castlevania and Suikoden.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know. Are there others?
Those are the ones that come to the Gradius. Another one. And there's a few others. I think that leaves those properties cell phone games in Japan.
Yeah.
And to a lesser extent here, and maybe they will license to other developers.
Mm-hmm.
That's my hope. I we'll see those licensed out. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I see them kind of going I see them kind of where Capcom is right now, where they're not out of business, but they're not necesarily pumping out these giant sort of – I mean, there was a time where you would get a game like Dark Void like every 6 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sort of like,
Lost Planet,
Dead Rising. These pretty big budget games.
Yeah.
That didn't turn around and do a ton of profit. I think Lost Planet did pretty well for them, actually. But now they're focused on stuff like, you know, Mega Man Legacy Collection, which is awesome. It's them sort of championing their old IPs again and doing so in a way that probably isn't super expensive. They remade the original Resident Evil. They remade Resident Evil Zero.
They're making Street Fighter V. Yeah. And with Capcom, there is one big difference, and that's that at this point, at least, they have Monster Hunter to hang their hat on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Japan, it's difficult to overstate how big a deal that is.
Yeah. So they're not at the point yet where they're sort of having that I don't know if you guys remember Midway when they had that fire sale of their IPs and things just went out the door, and that's why you saw stuff like Paperboy was on sale for like $125 or something like that. No one bought it because why?
Yeah,
I wish I'd have bought it for $125.
I trust you with that IP more than I trust pretty much anybody
else. If you could combine that IP with Mortal Kombat.
Paperboy and Mortal Kombat?
Mortal Paperboy Kombat.
But I think...
Is that a newspaper guy that delivers newspapers that are about Mortal Kombat, or is it about a guy that goes door-to-door to people's houses killing...
I'll tell you what it is. It's Ian Holm in Alien rolling up that magazine and shoving it down somebody's throat trying to choke them to death.
Okay.
That's what that looks like, except it's a newspaper instead of a magazine.
Right. Your version is real weird.
I don't know why that Bilbo Baggins would do that.
That's a movie where robot Bilbo tries to, like, kill somebody with a rolled up magazine.
Yeah. So, I'm going to be honest with you guys. As a consumer, I am completely torn on what to do with a story like this.
Yeah.
Because you want to support the company making this game because it looks great. And you want to support the creator making this game because he's made awesome games for years. But I don't think I want to support a company that treats its employees like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can write down whatever that curse was.
No, I'm right.
That's fine.
It's fine.
I know, and I'm torn. I don't want to like give these guys $60 to save the rec center from burning down or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Like the guys are the rec center thing is like an old joke about 80s movies like some evil guy takes over. Like the evil guy's already in the rec center.
Yeah.
Like I think giving him more money is he's just gonna glue more breakdancers to the roof.
If all these reports are true, if this is valid, then I guess you're sitting there thinking, okay, look, do I not give them money so that they'll continue to diminish out of the space and gradually just make these people go home, dissolve and fire everybody?
Yeah.
Or do I give them money in the hope that with more financial solvency, they rebuild their corporate culture and become something worth sending money to?
I mostly just want to bring a bunch of goats back to my home base in Metal Gear, so that's why I'm giving them money.
Exactly.
Is that how it works?
I'm just a fan of putting parachutes
on
goats.
Which is a line for you if they made Snake a 15-year-old pretty boy? Is that the cutoff point? Do you think that's what they're really fighting about?
If he's doing something
interesting. I would be totally okay with that. As somebody that has very little invested in the actual narrative of Metal Gear and just wants to tie a bunch of things to balloons,
I don't care
what
he
looks like.
It's not a design issue.
And to be fair, they sort of, with the back half of Sons of Liberty, made Snake 15.
They
sort of
did. That's a good point.
Okay. Yeah, nice naked blonde boy covered up his jungle doing cartwheels.
Is this something that's common with Japanese game developers, but there's just so few? You now that we don't read the
what,
story.
There was a story that came out
a couple months ago too about people at Nintendo talking about how there were nothing. I don't think anything this bad. There was nobody like cleaning Miyamoto's car or anything like that. But they're talking about just terrible conditions or
Okay, now I don't want to speak out of turn here because it's not like an expert on Japanese video game culture.
Lived in Japan,
but I lived in Japan. I taught English in a Sony factory for a while. I've been around people that work in Japanese business.
English in a Sony factory?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I taught English in a Sony factory. I taught Sony factory workers how to speak English. That was part of my job. Like I would go to the Sony factory in Minakamo once every week, and we had a little class, and people would come out of the laboratory where there were people there that had worked on the PlayStation 2 prototype. It was really cool. Like,
wow.
Yeah, they had worked on the original prototype, helped build it.
That's super cool.
And these engineers, they were working on cameras now, actually, and they would come in, teach English there in the factory, and then go home.
Did you get a free PlayStation Eye?
I did not. I did not get any cool free Sony products.
You didn't
for
get
that.
Any free Sony products?
I can't think of any.
Did they ever give you water or coffee?
They in fact did give me both water and coffee and tea. That was the main gift. But
no free Walkman.
No free Walkman. No free Sony. No Alpha camera, which is what they manufactured in that factory at that point. Anyway, I knew a lot of people that worked in Japanese businesses, and speaking in broad terms, and I do know some people that work in development houses now. Some Japanese development houses I hear great stories out of. They're really that people do work long hours. That's video game development. It's like that way. I mean, think about the stories we've heard about people with, cots in their offices and the video game support groups where I remember going to GDC last year and going to a conference where people were talking about this, these are developers coming up to the mic I don't remember. Anyway, they were talking about suicides in their business and how that affected the workplace. Stress levels, sleeping at work,
I was going to say, if you watch like Indie Game the Movie, you can see there's obviously people who are, and I get it. Like I've put my head so far into my work that I'm dedicated, I'm losing sleep and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think there's a difference between that level of dedication of we are going all in on something we care about and working for a AAA giant video game publisher that frankly should have its shit together.
Yeah.
That's why we got shocked at the Rise thing, the Crytek thing, because they were bragging about how many dinners they had to buy for people. Like, and people were saying, if you had a good project manager has a project spec'd out so that you're not buying people overtime dinner every other night, and they get to go home and see their wives.
Yeah. Right. I think that what we're going to find here is in some situations, the overlords are oppressive, and in some they're not. And when they're, and also don't forget, this is a shame culture where they talk about
Japan or gaming.
Japan, especially. Where shaming, taking the blame, things like that are an important part of that symbiotic relationship sometimes, and that people are bullied and made examples of in adult life as well as in children's life. It's a very common thing there. It doesn't make any sense to us from our culture necessarily, but It's something that happens. I'm not excusing it, condoning it, or it's just something that takes place. Some of these stories I have no trouble believing at all based on things people have told me about their work. But I've also seen businesses where people continue to work at the same company for decades and find joy and reward in what they do.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
These both coexist side by side.
Well, people also get into bad relationships or marriages because they're easy or simple. It doesn't mean, and then they just get lazy because walking away from something is sometimes harder than just sitting there and taking the punishment,
Yeah, but I doubt Konami is the only Japanese developer or publisher where things like this take place.
Yeah. I think it's just one of the ones we're probably hearing about again because they have a lot of games that the Western audience is still excited about.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
The fact is, this maybe is a broader discussion. The industry really does need to grow up and change how their project management practices and employee relations work.
You heard it here first. Unionize.
I've actually been saying that for years. I'm friends with what's his name? Older Pete from Mike Morona from Pete and Pete. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing grip work on film sets and TV shows for like the last 15 years. Ever since he got off of the Nickelodeon show, he's like, I like being on sets. And he worked on Boardwalk Empire and he worked on Dexter and blah, blah, blah. And every time a season ends, his entire team moves to something else. In the video game industry, somebody works on a game, it ships, and they fire that entire team. They lay them off. And those people scatter into different places. That's why you always see, like, from the ex-makers of Metroid Prime and Banjo-Kazooie.
And Halo. Yeah.
And Halo comes something that all these people will never get to see each other again for when this is done, the day it shifts.
Yeah.
That's why you read a company will ship a game and then dissolve the team working on it. And it's become so common, it's such commonplace practice that in the video game industry, nobody's ever said, like, well, why don't we have a union of people that can move from thing to thing? Like, why don't we have a whole bunch of people that do awesome camera work that can move from thing to thing?
But aren't we told constantly in this industry, you're lucky to have this job, a million people want your job? You're told that over and over and over and over again. You're lucky to have this job. You're lucky to get paid for something that people would love to do.
Yeah, of there's course. A, you know, if
well, that's
terrible managers, they will sort of pass down the don't rock the boat because you should be thankful you're here kind of thing, which is, in my opinion, just ludicrous.
I think it's unhealthy.
Anyone who's in the industry is obviously good enough to be doing what they do, and you should cherish hard workers and cherish talent.
And artists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And artists. Like, we can't sit around all day and say, like, are video games art? Are video games artistic? Let's put video games in museums and then fire the artists every 6 months and hire a new artist.
And in Hollywood, I mean, these guilds formed at a time when our country was frankly much friendlier to unions. Yeah. It is much harder to form a union now than it was when Hollywood was taking off and these groups formed. And even then, you had the studio system to deal with, and it was well into the life cycle of movie making that the studio system's back was finally broken and people were able to get out of ludicrous contracts. It would require a colossal effort in a very top ownership friendly legal culture to make this happen. It's not impossible, but it would be a fight.
It'd be really hard. Well, I think the biggest fear is that the union will picket or protest or hang back on the lines, in which case a game would get delayed for 6 months, which happens anyway
<That's>
to
really
every
funny.
Game. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. What do we know, right? We're just a bunch of people talking about a video game plastic box.
Still, you know what? At least,
but I just think it sort of feels like a goal towards.
No, totally.
It's a good start. It is a good start. Things ought to change. There's a lot that ought to change in this industry, and we know that. We know the working conditions are rough for people, and certainly about this.
If you have thoughts on this, send us your letters to Beyond at IGN. Is that it? I was going to say it's a long week. It's
Beyond at IGN.com.
Beyond at IGN.com. Send us your letters. What do you think about the Konami situation? What do you think about people working on video games in general? How should they be treated? I think a lot of people are just like, oh, well, they have a dream job, but it's still a job. They're still working. They're still calling their wives and being like, I can't come home tonight because I screwed up making a sheep fly away in a balloon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's true. When I went to Yuke's twice, they had like shampoo and soap under the desks because they would take showers, stay overnight for days on end.
Where was this?
Yuke's.
The wrestling
games? They made the wrestler, or they still make.
Yeah.
And this isn't a new thing. Mega Man 2 was a night project. I mean, they were like, it was a work of passion, but the guys, we're talking about the late 1987 or the late 1980s.
What were they doing in the day?
They're working on other games. And then they were like, we really want to make this game, so we'll just not sleep, stay here at Capcom, and make Mega Man 2.
God, they should have made ever a Mega Man game at night.
That's awesome.
Man, I guarantee you Mega Man 4, 5, and 6 were day projects.
Yeah.
3 was too, but 2 was a labor of
love.
Mega
Man 64 was definitely a day project.
Yeah. Yeah, it was all after, it was an after hours thing.
Yeah. All right.
The key to good games is like sleep deprivation and delirium.
Well, if that's the case, all games would be good now.
Yeah.
But I like your theory.
Well, wasn't that a Blood Dragon with some crazy story like that?
Yeah, yeah. It was like his
see, I mean, some of the best. Oh, I didn't know some that. Of the best decisions in art, in music, in video games, especially, have come from technical limitations.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's an okay challenge to overcome, but I don't think that should come from your bosses.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should come from the ecosystem, the platform in which you're working on, and not the asshole at the top telling you to sleep under your desk or clean the turds. Konami's full of turds. That's a problem. No, I'm sure things are fine over there.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely not. But anyways, PlayStation Plus. Is there a segue even? On to Hyper News, the PlayStation Plus lineup for August has been revealed, and it's some real good games. Jared.
We got real
good games.
Well, these real good games include Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris.
That game's a real good game.
That's a real good game.
It's four players. You can play on one television.
On that one TV.
It's a sequel to Guardians of the Galaxy, or what was it called?
I don't believe it's not. Although if it were, that would be amazing. That'd be
wrong Guardians.
You got that wooden guy running around.
Yeah.
If you thought
the last Tomb Raider game was a kind of little too serious in tone, and you miss like the goofy, wacky dinosaur pharaoh stuff of the old ones, you'll like this game because it has some ridiculous playable characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's way more arcadey. It's top-down, kind of 3/4 angle, mm-hmm. sort of like,
yeah, like
Mario
asymmetric.
RPG.
Yeah.
Solving puzzles. Yeah.
So we got that Lara Croft. That's a real good game there. Mm-hmm. Then we got Limbo.
It's also a real good game.
Yes, it is.
I've been given that for free. So am I crazy?
No, PlayStation's done it before.
Xbox does it
all the time.
It's an awesome game if you never played it.
Flip book of it on your desk once.
Yeah,
you just
that was
flip
weird.
And the little guy would walk around.
I spent a lot of time doing that flip book.
I did. It took a while.
So spoilers: the spider in Limbo is very early on, and,
yep.
and you get a little bit of revenge on that man.
I got out of bed Saturday morning and walked into my living room, and overnight a spider had woven an 8-foot web in my living room, and I walked through it. Yes.
How does that happen?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, it's ceiling to floor. That would be
just
8 feet.
One strain, or was
no,
it,
it was a web. Like it was like
that
an orb spider
like
web.
Scene in Gremlins
he was.
How
he was like this big. No, I went to bed.
What year is it?
I went to bed at like 10. I woke up at 9. It was a Saturday, and I walked into my living room through that web. That was fun. And then the spider, he was immense. And I swung my like Hello Kitty notebook at him, and I missed him, and he fell behind the couch. And then I pulled the couch out, and he was gone. And then I could just hear him behind me for the rest of the day.
Yeah, he called all 90 of his friends.
Yeah, I was just like, I had to leave finally.
What an idiot that spider is to build a house inside of a house.
Yeah, but I mean, he was trying to catch that. Maybe he was trying to catch me. But I don't know.
He should have been there for a lot longer.
So beyond that, Limbo.
He could have used more stealth.
Maybe he could have. Stealth Inc. 2.
Yeah,
Stealth Inc. 2.
A lot of their minion-esque characters.
Those guys look like minions.
They do kind of look like minions.
Kind of minion-esque.
So I have not played Stealth Inc. 2.
Neither have I. It is a puzzle platformer that has stealth.
So Stealth Inc. 2, really good. Sound Shapes.
One of the best. It will absolutely be included in our Essential 50 soon.
Yeah.
I'll probably do that one. Next week?
Secret best level creator ever?
Yeah. An amazing, the most amazing blending of phenomenal soundtrack with incredible platforming.
Yeah.
So ingenious. Such a great game.
And
that's available on everything. PS4, 3, and Vita.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Marty.
Go ahead.
No. It's just that crazy ability to like write songs and build levels at the same time. That's just nuts.
Yep.
Like you're making music by building a
level. You can jump around to a Beck song in that game.
You can? Can you jump around to it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're doing a little
or
pop
you can sit song. Perfectly still. I mean, what's how are
you? You probably want to listen to the beginning of it because I think you got to go further in the level to hear more.
Yep.
Castle Storm Complete Edition. Castle Storm is really groovy. Have you guys played Castle Storm?
No.
Nope.
Play the Castle Storm. It's
no.
it's
Castle
it's totally worth
killed my parents, so I'm not allowed to play it.
Oh.
We should be clear that not all of these will be PS4, PS3, and Vita.
They're scattered about, but I didn't put what they're on in little parentheses.
All of them. Sound Shapes is all of them.
Yep. And Lara Croft, I think, is just PS4, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Castle Storms Vita, I believe, right? Yeah.
Now, the next one is specifically PS3.
PS3, yep.
I think so. Yep. And that would be God of War Ascension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is the, at 7.8, which is very, very good, is the lowest ranked game on this list by IGN score. So they are all just good, very good all the way to amazing, according to our scale.
Yeah, Ascension's generally regarded as the worst of the God of War games, but that's sort of saying, like, Golden Abyss is the worst of the Uncharted games, but it's still pretty good.
And it's still pretty free.
Yeah, I don't know if this, I might be reading into it, but I don't know if this God of War thing is a sort of prelude to an upcoming announcement this year of finally details on the next God of War, which I feel like could happen at Paris Games Week or PSX, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not going to happen at, well, we're pretty sure it's not going to happen at Gamescom because Sony doesn't. Is not squatting at the
unless there's they pull out a surprise out of nowhere, but I really doubt it. I think they have enough planned for the rest of the year.
That's just a really good lineup.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, we totally take that for granted, how good of a deal that is.
I got it was either a tweet or an email, and someone was talking about how they feel slighted a little bit because they're like, well, I just bought Lara Croft and Sound Shapes like a month ago.
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't I be able to get something too? And I feel like I don't quite know how I feel about that. Like, I get that you're like, well, by being a hardcore fan and actually adopting these things early, I'm missing out on freebies. But at the same time, for me, it's exciting because these games you enjoy, sort of a conversation reignites about them. Like, I think people are going to be talking about Limbo and Sound Shapes this month, and that's awesome.
That's a great point, Marty.
I really like that. I remember talking about that with Colin and Greg on an episode of Beyond last year, where people were sort of kind of predicting the games that would become PS Plus games based on kind of what they were. Like, they said, you know, look at Shovel Knight. Like, that screams PlayStation Plus. Yeah. And I was kind of like, why? And they're like, well, it's indie and pixely, and they're just going to give that one away for free. I am so happy I got to play Shovel Knight the day it came out.
Mm-hmm, totally.
It obviously didn't come to PlayStation for a little while, but there's some things you just jump on and you play them, and you paid money to do that, and
it is good to pay money for the game of the year.
Yeah,
which is what Shovel Knight was.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you want a Shovel Knight 2, you have to help the developer with
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm a big fan, especially of like indie games like that. Like, if a game is less than $20, I will gladly pay for it.
And there's going to be a couple games you buy that end up being free, but there's also going to be a couple games that you'll get for free that you never would have bought.
Yeah. Right.
Like Lara Croft, I just skipped, and it just fell between the cracks, and I was like, well, I'll play Tomb Raider when it comes out this fall, but this is totally awesome. Like, I'm going to check this out and play straight through it. So
yeah,
absolutely. Let's do, we've tried to do that book club thing before, but let's do that with Sound Shapes, because I just want to talk about Sound Shapes again.
Sound Shapes, so great.
Download Sound Shapes, play it. Yeah. We'll start a thread on...
It's cross-buy, I think it's cross-save, too.
Cross-buy, cross-save, I'll start a thread on the Facebook group, send your emails about it to...
PlayStation Party.
PlayStation Party, PSP.
Yep.
Ooh. Wait, that's already a thing. Damn it.
You are welcome.
It's good on everything, but I think if you have a Vita and have the choice, play it on Vita. I feel like it's even better there.
Right. Real good stuff.
Marty, speaking of PlayStation Plus, what is this bonus gift? What are we talking about here?
Jared,
how do I get
what is this bonus gift?
I don't know, because as of the beginning of the show, it still hasn't been announced.
Yeah.
So apparently people that were very early adopters of PS Plus 5 years ago are getting sent emails today, and there's some kind of special gift.
I didn't get
an
email yet.
As of the beginning of the show, those don't seem to have gone out yet, so we don't know what that gift is. That was based on a news story that was on IGN this morning. I was hoping by the time we came in here, we would know what that is, but we don't. So there's something special coming in theory.
If you've been subscribed since day one, which is 5 years ago, check your email. You're getting something cool.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. This could range anywhere from here's a free game or here's choose one of these four games to here's 10, 15, 20 bucks in credit.
This is one of the times where I want something physical.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want a cool statue.
Well, I will mail you a taco.
What kind of taco?
Maybe. How about Del Taco Taco?
No, that's disgusting.
Well, I know.
Well, actually, if you mailed it, it'd probably be fine because it's
It'd be the same. It'd be petrified. It'd be like completely different.
Like, I'll take a Choco Taco.
You want me to mail? But are we all melty?
You don't have to mail anything to me. We work 10 feet from each other.
Okay, I will give you a Choco Taco because they're delicious.
I'll buy
one for myself as well.
That sounds great. Why don't we just get Choco Tacos?
That sounds
together?
Good. You want one? You want a Choco Taco?
We'll deal with the post office at all.
I don't think I've had a Choco Taco in 15 years.
So your PlayStation Plus bonus gift is buy yourself a Choco Taco.
That is the gift right there.
Go out there. Now, what they are is they are tacos made of Chocos.
They are an ice creamy, delicious snack.
That's right.
Yep.
Main
Delectable.
Ingredient, Choco.
Yeah. Yeah. Second ingredient, Taco.
Taco. You put those two together and you got it.
Yeah,
the name says it all.
It contains no meat or vegetables. Nope. It's actually just types of dairy and some chocolate and the wafer. Yep. And it's
delicious.
It always
wafer.
Just crumbles apart, but it's great.
A sugary
it's a real
shell.
Mess. That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
And this has been Brian and Jared describe food.
It's actually we'll let's taco Choco tacos.
Exactly.
Oh, let's Choco taco.
Yeah,
let's
oh,
Choco
wow.
taco.
Yeah.
Mm, we could met meat on it, I suppose, or salsa, but that'd be weird.
You guys are,
that would be disgusting.
That would not taste very good. Have you eaten that scorpion on your desk yet?
No. It's in a lollipop.
I know.
I'm saving it for a day where I'm sad enough to eat a scorpion lollipop.
I'm waiting.
Which luckily hasn't happened this
well,
year.
Well, you eat weird stuff on the site, so that's, you know.
When I do it on camera, it's a different story.
Well, yeah, but I bought you that to eat on camera.
How am I supposed to eat a lollipop on camera? You know how disgusting that sounds?
Well, it's got a scorpion in the middle. You're worried about the
yeah,
lollipop
but I,
part?
Like, what
you
want to
sit there and
close up of...
just slovenly, slowly lap around the outer exterior of a lollipop to reveal a dead scorpion?
No, I want you to eat, like, reveal and then eat the scorpion.
That sounds like a Dark Souls sequel.
Dark Souls sequels look great.
All right, so we don't know what the surprise is, what this present is.
No.
We still have no idea. All right, well, let us know if you got one. If you don't want it, send it to us.
Yep.
If it's Choco Taco, do not mail it.
Do not mail it.
Because it will be a weird pile of milk by the time we get it.
We do not want that. Maybe it'll become butter by the end. It'll be churned up in the mail, and the milk will turn into butter.
Speaking of churned up in the mail, I churned up a few questions by going in the Podcast Beyond Facebook group, where you can go and join a ever-growing group of amazing, wonderful, like-minded individuals. We do a quick section there called Rapid Fire, where I will pop in, ask questions, and pick 5 to 7 of them completely arbitrarily. Actually, I usually try to pick the best ones.
Yeah, you absolutely do that.
And I ask them to the show as fast as possible. So this is Rapid Fire number 1. Sebastian Thrower asks, what are the best video game romances?
I bring it up literally every week, Vincent and Catherine and other Catherine.
Megan gave me a face like, those don't exist.
What video game romances? What's been done well?
Pass.
Wow. Yeah.
Pass.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
There's a lot that I really like, and so I can't just pick one. Sorry.
Can I pretend Wally's a video game so I can say Wally and Eva?
No, Jesus Christ, it's a movie.
I know. But I know, but
my favorite video game of all time is Casablanca.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, I think Catherine works well. I think on the Atlas train. I think stuff from Persona 4 works really well.
I actually like the stuff that happens in the Uncharted games.
Yeah,
because it's actually a more realistic romance where the woman's angry because the guy's being a total idiot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
Like, and being a complete selfish asshole. And I think that's kind of a little better than just sort of like the old princess trope of being like, save this girl, she needs help. It's like, it's one character that's like, why are you doing this to the other character? The other one being like, because I have to, I'm a dude.
Yeah.
I think it's very smart. It's very well handled.
Yeah.
I've done the thing before where I've created myself and like my spouse in The Sims,
mm-hmm.
and tried to live out our lives.
It
ended terribly. I think I like died my own urine in a swimming pool or something. But
well, you can't die if you pee in a swimming pool, can you?
Well, you can if somebody takes the ladder out and you run out of strength and drown, which I think is what happened.
It just looks mortified.
You know,
that was not a good romance.
No, it's fine. Number 2, Walter Wayne, not Pierre the Third, which sounds like the name of a dude that would give you a haunted house, asks, why did you guys decide on game journalism over another career within the industry? I don't know. I never really wanted to, I guess because reading the Konami story, stuff like that. No, stuff like that is why it's very tough to sort of be like, I want to go head down on one thing for a long time.
Yeah.
I think I can answer for a bunch of people in the building, and you guys can answer for yourselves, is that we're very scatterbrained here at IGN. We like to work on a lot of different things. Like, I like to be able to one day I'm doing a video with Sergeant Slaughter, and the next day I'm in here talking about Konami and turds in the pool.
And Choco Tacos.
And Choco Tacos. And the day after, I'm on a Mario Maker live stream. When you work on a game or you do PR for a game, you're kind of head down on one specific thing for a very long time.
Yeah.
And that's why it takes a certain type of individual to really have that kind of focus, and I completely lack that. So that's
cool.
That's my answer.
Yeah. No, for me, writing is just one of the 3 things in life I'm good at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the other 2?
Drinking and knowing which way the ocean is.
Wow.
Yeah.
You'd have been great on Lewis and Clark's expedition.
Yeah.
Can we talk about your 2-year gap? We don't have to.
We'll talk about it next week.
Okay, we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week.
You waiting for Goldfarb on that one?
Yeah.
We have a PlayStation Plus bonus surprise from Marty Sleva next week on Podcast Beyond.
Yeah,
we're going to learn about a little bit of a surprise.
It's pretty
Marty
amazing.
The other day.
It's the best thing that ever happened.
Number three.
Oh,
no,
sorry.
Answer. Go
I didn't.
It.
Sorry. We're. No, panic.
Did you just get possessed?
No, don't pee the pool again.
Exactly. I never intended to do this. This was a complete accident. I started writing about video games in my, I guess early 30s, out of joy and because I liked writing. And I was working in completely different careers than what I'm doing now. And it all kind of fell together. So I ended up in journalism because I found a nexus where two of the things in life that are somehow like two of the rarest jobs in the world are working in video games and writing. And somehow I found a place where I could do both those things at the same time. Like that's like the best thing ever.
Being a king is pretty rare.
Yeah. But it is pretty rare. It's rarer, but it's hard to get paid to write full time about anything.
Right.
And it's hard to get a job in video games and to have both of those at one convergence. That's just the best.
It's a good place to be.
Absolute accident that I ended up here.
I love writing. I love video games. Voila.
There we go. Yeah.
Boom. Perfect. Crush it.
Number three, Josiah Beiler. I think that's how your name is. Josiah?
Josiah.
Is it J and H?
Well, it's probably Josiah. Occasionally it's Hosea, but it's, we're going to say Josiah.
Josiah Beiler asks, if you had to go back in time and explain what a video game was, what one game would you take with you and why?
I'm assuming he means to before video games existed.
Yeah, so you go back in time and you hope people don't
flip
rocks at you.
Yeah, flip
and kill
the F
you
out. That's burn good. You for being a witch.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Jesus. Probably Pac-Man because it's instantly comprehensible, but gets the idea across of what's it's abstract. It's not based on any real world thing, so they get the idea. Oh, look, it's a fantasy, but you can figure out what you're supposed to do in Pac-Man in like a minute. And there's very simple control interface, four-directional movement. People
That's
would
good.
Get it, and it would get the, and then they'd be like, "Oh, what else could I do?"
See, my fear is that no matter what you showed them, that they would think it was a video of the future, like you were trying to show them something that was going to happen.
That's interesting.
Like, it'd be like,
"Who is this yellow man, and why is he trying to eat all my ghosts?"
At one point, did these ghosts show up? And also, what's a pretzel?
Pretzels have been around a long time.
Pretzels?
Yeah, pretzels have been a really long time,
really?
Actually. Yeah, yeah. Pretzels have been around for ages.
Pretzels
have
been around longer than apples.
So, no, that is untrue. they make a lot of pretzels in Pennsylvania. They're good too. But
Pennsylvania?
I think it's Pennsylvania.
Get us out of here.
Oh, Pretzelvania 2, Simon's Quest. But it's kind of like the thing about how do you explain what an explosion sounds like to somebody who's never heard one?
You just go. Like,
There's inherent problems with this. Yeah.
God, you're an idiot.
I would say, wait, no one even answered the question.
I thought he was going to get it. We were going to end up in a history lesson about bathtubs if we had stayed on this. Keep going.
Why do you let me on this show?
I don't know.
I'm so sorry.
I don't always want to be the guy who's like, I'd want to show everyone Journey.
Journey.
But I want to show everyone Journey.
That's all right. That's
great. Yeah, nobody back then knew about what it was like to walk across an empty desert or slowly trudge up a mountain. Well, animal noise is playing in the background. Megan, save us.
I was just going to say Pong, because that is super simple. Like, they did have an ancient form of tennis, so there you go.
Yeah, they just played it with human heads.
Pretty much, here's a happy alternative. Instead of using human heads, you can get this ball.
That is a game where that's like the epitome of, okay, don't freak out. Mm-hmm. This is going to be really weird, but it's not too crazy.
Yeah.
And you see Pong, and it's like, that's insane, but I can handle it. Whereas you're like, watch this. It's Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Just don't freak out.
Yeah. There's a world inside of this thing.
Yeah. Pong's a great choice.
I think my issue with Pong would be a lot of people would be gathered around the hypothetical self-running television that you brought back in time through your time machine that they would not too busy throwing rocks at out of fear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they would wonder,
where the ball went when it went past the paddle.
Oh, I used to have.
Is
this...
it in the world now?
No, I used to have this cat, and when I would watch racing, like NASCAR on TV, and the cars went off screen, she would run around the side trying to find them. Yeah.
Like she's a stupid animal.
Yeah, that would happen.
I feel like if I showed someone Rez, I could just become their god. they would defy all religions of the time.
That's actually really smart. We didn't really think about that. You could show people certain games, and you would just look like you were a deity from space.
Yeah,
you probably would. Yeah. But they might try to sacrifice you like the Ewoks did.
All right, and number five is the last one we're answering. Andrew McCune asks, Hamburger Helper. It was supposed to say Hamburger Helper. I just put in Hamburger
Help.
It's Hamburger Helper, yay or nay.
Nay.
I'm going with nay.
That's
nay.
That's a hard nay. It's, and it's also nay works because Hamburger Helper is also made of horse.
Yeah.
So what, I'm going to say what I usually say about how do you feel about Hamburger Helper, Megan?
Have you ever had
wrong.
It?
It's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it that?
Very
it's
wrong.
Really just a spice pack. I mean, right? It's just like ground up meat, and then you throw a spice pack.
So
in
here's
it.
The
that's
thing.
Hamburger
I think
and some noodles.
Both of those words independently are very important.
Love hamburgers. Love helping.
Helping is important.
Yeah, it is.
I think the second you have a disembodied hand that talks with a mouth on his palm that screams about making dinner for your
but they're very honest about what it's made of.
Yes.
They're
hamburger.
That's true.
Yeah, it's not horse. Really, it couldn't be horse because you'd have to use horse meat because
you don't know
Hamburger Helper
the
contains
spices might be horse.
You have to, supply your own ham. A lot of people make that's a very rookie move with Hamburger Helpers. You go to the store and you think it's a self-contained meal.
Yeah.
It is if it's the apocalypse. If you're eating Hamburger Helper without hamburgers, then you're probably in a bunker somewhere.
Do you remember the Hamburger Helper jingle about mom?
If mom is divorced and dad's not coming home, it's Hamburger Helper and you're all alone. I think that was it, right? All right. Thank you for listening to Podcast Beyond. That was a ride.
That was,
man.
Jesus Christ.
All over the place. This is a good one.
That's beautiful.
Jared, do you want to close us off with the Essential 50?
Absolutely. Since I will never be back on the show again, I'm going to make
I might be the one that's never going to back
account. No, this week, let's do Klonoa, Door to Phantomeal for ye old PlayStation.
Yep.
Going back in the time. So, Klonoa was one of the earlier versions or earlier renditions of a 2.5D platformer.
Yeah.
It was a period of time where 2D was out and 3D was in, and nobody cared about 2D platforming for a while because, you know, we had this kind of cool technological revolution going on, and we had just had 10 solid years of 2D platformers, and people kind of forgot that you could make good ones still that did original things. And for a while, they were considered completely dead. So Klonoa comes out in the middle of all this and is soundly ignored by everybody for several reasons. One, because it sounds like an STD.
That's not incorrect.
Two, because it starred a mascot character that looked kind of like Yakko Warner. With Pac-Man on his hat.
Yeah, what kind of animal was that?
I don't know what Klonoa is.
Is Klonoa a cat?
I don't know.
Like cat
really, I don't know. He's like a long-eared
like a skunk.
Thing. Well, he's a... I'm not even sure Klonoa's an animal. Yeah. No, well, let's explain. Totally. You know, I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but Klonoa's origin is part of how the whole thing wraps up. Have you guys played Klonoa?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you get
to the end?
Got a real sad ending.
So this game... Wrong place, wrong time, nobody cared, nobody bought it. It was reissued for the Wii a few years ago in a great version that was soundly ignored. But this, go out and find this thing. You're going to have a hard time finding it on PlayStation. Go find the Wii version if you can't. It is a superb 2D platformer.
It's
just
really
wonderful. It feels almost like it has a kind of a jumping on top of things and grabbing a midair mechanic that sort of feels like if Super Mario 2 had ever had a sequel...
Yeah.
I think it would have felt something like Klonoa.
Sure.
And it explored a lot of things that you don't really see done since. It had a Rayman-ish kind of floatiness to it, but you grab the stuff in midair and use that to vault yourself higher, and the puzzle levels got harder and harder as you went on, but it was never like annoying puzzle platforming where you couldn't figure out what to do. It was just like, I've got to go here, and then here, and then here, and then here, and you had that sense of precision like you get in a really good Mario game where you're just like on fire, and you feel like you can't do anything wrong, and it's so good. And the melancholy turn it takes.
It gets real sad.
And that ending?
For GameStar.
We're going to have to talk about that after the show.
For GameStar and Cat Skunk.
Oh, man. Let's not spoil it for people. Yeah, but it is positively, it's like A.A. Milne, Winnie the Pooh ending, like awful. It's just tears your heart out.
Winnie the Pooh die at the end of Winnie
the Pooh? No, Winnie the Pooh, the kid's like, I have to stop imagining you're alive now.
Yeah, the kid's like, I have to grow up, and I'm not ever allowed to come back to the Hundred Acre Wood again.
And then all the animals eat each other.
But Pooh, like, he's a very, very little brain, so, like, Christopher Robin takes him off to tell him this, and Pooh can't understand. And Christopher Robin's, like, trying to tell him, and Pooh's just like, I don't get it. And he has to leave Pooh alone, confused, and friendless forever.
So does Winnie the Pooh go crazy and eat all the other animals?
We never see that part. That's the Brian Altano fanfic.
He's screaming honey and he just tears them all apart.
Yeah.
He's just fed it with Eeyore.
Oh, Bob.
And Eeyore's like, I knew the whole time.
But yeah, it's so Klonoa could have been, I mean, it almost could have been an NES game. Two button, you know, a cross pad and two button controls. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very traditional. But the level designs and the character control are
great
superb.
Soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
I think that and the Tomba games are the best 2D platformers on
Tomba. Interesting. We'll have to talk about that sometime.
Yeah. Stars a naked boy. Well, he's got some form of pants, but he's mostly naked.
I thought he was a skunk.
Symphony, naked skunk man.
Symphony of the Night is the best game on the original PlayStation. It's certainly the best like 2D game. Mm-hmm. But Klonoa is hands down the best precision platformer on the system.
Oh, there you go.
Wow. Accepted.
Accepted. Sounds good, Jared.
Thanks.
Let's talk about the sad ending someday. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We'll go around the table quick with Twitter plugs and something that you want people to see or watch or something that you worked on. Jared, we'll start with you.
Okay, so my Twitter handle is PettyCommentJared, PettyCommentJared. Something to check out. We did a 7 video game movies worth watching last week.
Yeah,
I think that's
still
awesome. Floating around. Yeah. Check that out because those are pretty good movies. And there's a lot of crappy video game movies, but a few good ones. Go out and watch a couple of those if you don't mind.
Brian?
My Twitter handle is Agent Bizzle, and the thing that I'm really, really excited to tell you guys about is that on August 14th, that's Friday.
Is this actually happening?
August 14th at noon, Max Scoville and I are bringing back Up at Noon.
Yay!
Oh!
Yeah! And it's live, so you can interact with us on the fly, you can catch us off guard, and we're going to handle
that. Can we have Ryan Reynolds video bomb you again?
Ryan Reynolds will video bomb us every episode. He's legally obliged to do that. We're really excited about this. If you like all of the kind of dumb off-topic stuff that we do on this show sometimes that I know a lot of you get mad about because we do too much of it here, we'll try to do more of it there so there's less of it here and we can get back to talking about Winnie the Pooh eating his friends and the history of pretzels. So that's Up at Noon live August 14th. Max Scoville and I will be both hosting at the same time. So that's it. Come join us. We're going to have fun.
That's awesome.
You were complicit in all of that, Choco Taco Boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's awful. Big time.
Megan?
If you love JRPGs, wrestling, or anime, hit me up on Twitter at Megan, M-E-G-H-A-N _IGN, and I will be happy to talk to you about those things.
And you're also on another IGN podcast.
I am.
What's the name of that podcast?
IGN Anime Club.
Woo!
Which
is blowing up.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's getting big.
It's very exciting. Mm-hmm. Yes. I had people recognize me at Anime Expo, and that was
really
pretty,
that's awesome.
That tripped me out because it was thousands of people, and we had just started, and I was like, no one's
Somebody messaged me the other day, and they watched the Podcast Beyond video for the first time, and they're like, oh, man, I didn't know you guys record in the Anime Club studio.
I saw that.
That's awesome.
We've been going on for 10 years. Yeah. Nice work.
That's great.
That is awesome.
Nice work.
What about you, Marty?
I love that. Yeah, check out Anime Club. You guys do that every week. I am on Twitter at McBiggity. My review for Rare Replay will be up by now. That is the opposite of a PlayStation game. A 9.
All right.
9.0. Wow. It is anyone who is interested in video game history should check it out. It's sort of a new benchmark for how compilations and sort of historical relics should be treated in video games. And then the next review I'm on, which is more applicable to this audience, is Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
Nice.
That probably won't be up till maybe before next episode, but we'll see when the embargo is.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you guys so much for joining us. That was Podcast Beyond, episode 405. Subscribe on iTunes, check it out on YouTube, watch it on IGN. However you consume it, we are always grateful. Shoot us an email at beyond@ign.com. If you have a question, comment, or concern, join the Facebook group, Podcast Unlocked. Podcast Beyond. I deliver this message twice a week.
You get the hell out of here, you traitor.
Twice a week.
Oh my God. He fell apart right there at the end.
Oh, you tripped at the finish line.
Unbelievable. That is unacceptable. Beyond, you piece of trash.
Beyond.
Beyond.
And I guess Podcast Unlocked too.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, But more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.